Hello, and welcome to Troubleshooting Enablement, the podcast where we get real about enablement and the stuff that's keeping us up at night. I'm Devin McDermott, your host, enable nerd, and dog mom to Blanche Devereaux, the Maltipoo. And I know that navigating the ever-evolving landscape of enablement can feel like uncharted territory. So that's where Troubleshooting Enablement comes in. This podcast is a safe space to tackle those nagging questions you've been hesitant to ask in public spaces like LinkedIn, social media, or enablement forums. If you've ever felt like everybody's got it all figured out except me, or have been intimidated to raise questions that might seem too basic or straightforward, you are not alone. Our expert guests are here to help you sort through it all one step at a time. So here's how it works. We source questions about what's going on in the enablement world from all over. Coaching conversations, LinkedIn, enablement forums, and a very lovely anonymous intake form, and directly from our listeners. Each episode, we bring in some of the brightest enablement and enablement adjacent minds to tackle one of those questions head on. They'll share their wisdom, battle-tested strategies, and real-world tips for success. If you have a question you want to ask, send it to Devon, D-E-V-O-N, at troubleshootingenablement.com. All right, it is time to meet our guest. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by award-winning enablement pro, public speaker extraordinaire, and director of global sales and pre-sales enablement at Blackline, Jennifer Ryan. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Devon.
I am so excited that you're here today. So we met last year at the SEC Summit in Las Vegas, where you gave such a fun and informative presentation on the power of multimedia and learning experiences. It was so awesome. I just rewatched it actually the other day. And you are a pro in just about everything, but we'll focus on a few things: learning experience design, understanding rep mindset, being an expert on finding your yes mentality. And I also heard that you have mastered the fine art of snuggling baby kangaroos, which I am very jealous of. So Jennifer, welcome. And please tell our guests a little bit about yourself.
Well, I don't know if I can live up to that kind of hype, but
all true.
But my name is Jennifer Ryan. I have been in the enablement space long before we called it enablement. And I always think of life as a road where you cross things and then you go away and you cross things. So I started in sales training a long time ago when I was clearly a child, about 25 years ago now. And then I moved away from it and I came back, and it was like that dream that just kept calling me back, and I'll never leave again as long as they'll have me. I run the pre-sales, sales, and BDR enablement. And then I have a team of learning designers at Blackline. So I'm extremely lucky, and I'm very excited about what we're going to talk about.
Oh my gosh, me too. And you are just absolutely phenomenal. So thrilled that you're here today. And the question that we're tackling is about enablement as the enforcer. So Jennifer, are you ready to do some troubleshooting?
I am absolutely ready. I'm actually hoping I'm going to learn something out of this too. So
me too, selfishly. So, okay, we're going to start with a question that comes to us from a sales enablement manager. We're going to call her Lisa. And Lisa says, "Dear Troubleshooting Enablement, I'm facing a challenge where our sales leaders expect our enablement team to enforce the adoption of new tools and processes, but we lack the authority to do so. For example, we've introduced a new sales methodology, but adoption has been really slow. Sales leaders expect our enablement team to police their team members, but we're struggling to get everyone on board. What strategies can we use to gain alignment with sales leadership and increase adoption to ensure that the sales team adheres to the new methodology? More broadly, how can we work with leadership to define roles and responsibilities to motivate the successful adoption and establish clear ownership and accountability? Signed, the reluctant enforcer." So Jennifer, this is a loaded question with multiple parts. What is your recommendation for Lisa in this instance?
So it's funny, when I read the question, I thought, oh my gosh, did I write this and
yes,
I forgot that I wrote it? Because that happens to me a lot. I literally forget everything. But as soon as I started to think through it, this is a change management question. And I got certified in change management from ProSci, which I highly recommend to anybody because it changes your complete outlook on how you look at everything. This is not a singular problem.
Mm-hmm.
every enablement team has, whether it's in your methodology, whether it's in your pushback on, I don't need that much product, whether it's, we have too many marketing or not enough marketing assets, yes. Whatever it is, there's always pushback. And it's funny when you think about how do you go about knowing what you know, knowing that they need to know it, knowing that the people above you want and need them to know, but everybody says do it, but everybody says, no, I'm not going to do it. You're in this very interesting balanced place where you're never, I can't say never, because I'm sure there's some unicorn out there that has been bestowed with authority in their business.
Oh, but gosh. Can we all go work there? Sorry. Go
right.
ahead.
Yeah. Can we please? But for the most part, we can't, we are never going to have authority in enablement. But what we do is what we do have is the tools that help us balance between needing to get something done and figuring out why people are resistant to it. And in that balance is the magic of moving that whatever forward, mm-hmm. whatever that might be for your team. So for me, I know that whenever we put out a new enablement initiative, our first meeting is always with the first level leaders. Mm-hmm. And it's always, and a lot of people do this. So this is, please, anybody who's listening to this, please don't think I'm trying to tell you something you don't already know, but sometimes we have to be reminded. But we always meet with the leaders first and we explain to them over and over and over again, we're teaching you first because you are now the arm of enablement. You mm-hmm. have the means to reinforce. I have the means to educate you. I have the means to support you. But I do not have the means to make your people do something that you don't enforce them to do.
Mm-hmm. It's establishing those expectations up front. And I love how you're empowering them. Like, this is, you are the linchpin in this. We are here to elevate and facilitate. Managers, you are the stars. And just kind of using that as a tool, which is so important.
It is. You're absolutely right. And if we think about any, it's not just in sales. It's in every company and in every department that oftentimes people who are put in people leadership position are put there because they were really good individual contributors. Mm-hmm. And there's a skill to being a people leader. Right? You know, you're a people leader, right?
It's very
hard.
And
it's something that each of us have had to learn as we went. But what helps us motivate people to do something different is saying, this is what's expected. Now, how do I help you meet that? And that's where that double side comes from. So for like a new methodology, why are they resisting? And that has to be your first question. Why? Why don't they want to? And it's going to come in two forms. It's going to say, I don't need this. I've been doing this for X amount of years. Therefore, I don't need what you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the other side, and it's actually the same for both, but it presents differently, is, well, I'm afraid to do it because I don't really get it and I don't want to look dumb.
Yep.
So how do we tackle fear? And that's where all of this comes from, is how do we tackle fear?
Yeah.
We're all afraid of something.
It's so true. And I think what you're getting at is so important. And it's often the thing that gets forgotten is like, tell people exactly what is going to happen. Who's responsible for what? What does this process look like? Set those expectations early on. There's no mystery. There's no secret. That first conversation you have with your CRO or your head of sales is, we are launching this. This is your role. This is our role. We are going to support you. And making sure you can do your job well. We'll give you the tools, the dashboards, whatever it may be, but really setting expectations. I took the long way around that one, but setting expectations clearly so there's no surprise about who's doing what and who's responsible for what with their teams.
I'm really glad actually you took the long way, because if you think about the first time like you had to set expectations, someone says, set expectations. And you're like, I don't know if I know what that means.
Right.
Set what expectations? Do your job? Like, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Like, can you just do your job? I'm just trying to do mine. Can you do yours? But that doesn't help anyone. And it doesn't help put people in the right frame of mind. And I always equate this to children, just because we've all been children and a lot of people have them. I do not. But
same.
Or even our dogs, our cats, right? That there has to be something in it for everyone. And I know we all have heard with them. We've all heard incentivized. But oftentimes we forget, because our incentive is, we've been given a goal. you're stopping me from meeting my goals. So now I'm angry, I'm frustrated, and I have all the feelings that you have, about what this change is. So now we're both trying to elicit this change with the exact same negative emotions about it.
That's so interesting to think about the WIFM, because to your point, even with like our learners or the folks we're supporting, the WIFM sometimes gets forgotten, but I never really thought about it in the context of our stakeholders, of like what's in it for them and ensuring they understand the benefit to them. Like by doing this, this is what you are going to see. That's super important. And I think something I'd love to ask you in the context of this is, as with our stakeholders, how do we make sure that A, we're aligning on the WIFM for them, but how do we make sure we're aligning clearly on those roles and responsibilities when it comes to day-to-day of enablement efforts, but also these projects or, you know, launching a new methodology? What are some ways that you've established those clear boundaries? And again, it can be in the context of our question or more broadly in enablement.
I wish it was cookie cutter. I wish there yeah. was a way, if you take this step and this step and this step. What I find works more often than not is, and I always tell my team, let's play chess, not checkers, that there's a ripple effect, a butterfly effect to every single action we take. Mm-hmm. So if we can establish that and show our buyer, our salespeople can use this with our buyers, we can use it with our sellers, other people can use it with us, is I'm asking you to do XYZ. And the reason is this will get you this that gets you your goal. And these are the steps we're taking. Help me see what you see in this. Because if we find the right way together, we'll both move forward. Are you willing to do that with me? Then it becomes a with and not an at. When people yeah. tell me what to do, even if it's you need to tie your shoe or you're going to fall over, I like it like that. And I'm yeah. going to stick my heels in and I'm going to say, absolutely not. You know, tell me what to do.
Did this on purpose.
Yeah. But if you ask me, absolutely, I want to help. How can I help? And it changes how I show up in the situation. So how do we help people show up in the right place by addressing how they're going to emotionally arrive at the situation?
Yeah. So I love that, like establishing the boundaries, making sure everybody feels like they know their part, they're on board with what is expected of them. We've provided them with the why. We're bringing them on the journey. So we establish all of that early on. Things are great. Then we start to see the managers kind of dropping off, and we're watching the data. Reps are not adopting, whether it's MedPick or whatever, you know, methodology of your choosing. How do you bring your leaders back on board and ensure that alignment throughout the project along the way? Like, what are some tactics that you've employed to re-engage and kind of reset, even if you've done all the right things up front? Because we've all seen that happen too, where you're like, I followed the stakeholder handbook, I set expectations, and now they're just not doing it. How have you approached that?
As much as I'd like to say that in the carrot and stick conversation, the carrot always works.
I wish.
Right? And again, I hate to equate it to children, but it's a picture everybody can make. Mm-hmm. But if you tell a small child or a kindergartner, we'll take, and say, before you go out in the street, look both ways. Why? What are we going to do? We're going to look both ways. Okay. Everybody knows we're going to look both ways. And then their ball goes into the street. Do they look both ways? No, they run. Cars are coming. So what does mom, dad, uncle, aunt, grandma do? Grab them by the arm and pull.
Yep.
Now, is that kind of physical, whatever, the right thing to do in the moment? Yes, because my hand on their arm is a lot less than the car that's going to hit them while they're, mm-hmm. It's a horrible image. But what we have to do is establish that, yes, we want to partner with you, but we can't control your actions. Only you can. And we know that every action has a cause and effect. So this is how we are doing things for me at Blackline. This is what we do. I'm here to help you through it. You're not alone. I'm your partner. But if you want to stay at Blackline, this is how we do things.
Yeah.
And it's a strong boundary, but it's not do it or else. It's, yeah. But I'm here to help you and you're not alone.
Yeah.
You don't have to fear. You can make mistakes. Mistakes are good. That's how we learn. You're okay. But no is not an option.
I love that. I find sometimes if you don't have a strong leader to support you in that, it can be really challenging. And I think that's where this question is getting at as well, of like, we've aligned with leadership, but they're not there advocating and sending their direct reports, reminders, or showing up and kind of doing the work themselves. And that can always be a challenge, because then it seems like, wait, why is enablement doing this to us? When in reality, we have the alignment, we have the buy-in, and leadership kind of drops off because they're like, y'all can go handle that. So right. how do you approach that when you don't really have the power and authority, and maybe your CRO, your head of sales, whoever is kind of the owner of this initiative, they're on board, they signed off, and then they kind of disappear into whatever board meeting prep they're doing.
Communication is key. So establishing that everyone of power is in the same place with you is critical before anything can start. So two things that have to happen when you're thinking about change management is there has to be a communication plan and there has to be an action plan. And without those two things, you're sunk. Now, those are nice. Mm-hmm. No, but not everybody has them. And I've been in more situations where someone has said to me, Jen, I need you to XYZ. I go in, I say, we're going to do it. And then there's no follow-up and no backup. Even though my CRO has announced to everyone, this is what we're doing. You need to do it by this date. Mm-hmm. But as much as there's accountability on the rep level from RVP, there has to be accountability every step of the way between you and your CRO.
It's so true. And it's communication, right? We talk a lot about like stakeholder engagement, communication, but building highly effective partnerships, showing up, even if you are an enablement associate or manager, showing up as a leader through your communication style and proactive, things are off track, communicate that early and often. And I think that this is the same scenario. So we talked a lot about change management. Yep. I'm obsessed with change management, not certified yet. I want to hear more about that after our chat. When I talk about change management or even enablement through the change management lens to validate the why for the communication plan, the planning, and all that, sometimes folks in my organization, this is kind of like a blanket for all of the organizations I've worked in, they're like, Devin, that's so heavy. Why do you need to overprocess this stuff? Like, this is just a thing we know we need to do. Why do you have to bring change management into it? We all know, like, when we don't follow a proper change management plan, things typically don't go as expected. And so how do you navigate that? Where, like, maybe the organization isn't bought in, or they feel like this is too heavy, this is too cumbersome. How do you kind of thread change management into, let's say, this type of initiative or effort, or just in general in your enablement strategy?
So I actually have someone I work with at Blackline, and she got certified in change management right before I did. In the world of business, we're always told, leave your emotions at the door. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible thing, because that's like saying, leave your humanity at the door. Right. It's not a great thing. But to truly change, you need five things. You need a vision. You need skills. You need incentives. You need resources. And you need an action plan. And the beautiful part about, and this was actually something that was put together, it's called a framework for thinking about system change. And it equates each one of these five components to an emotional response. So if we plan well with all of these five things, we won't see these emotions. But if we see these emotions, we know what's missing. So it gives us both sides of that wall to know that if people, there's a lot of, I don't understand what we're doing. What does this even mean? It means that you've not established a vision that people can see themselves doing something different. If they can't see themselves, they can see what you're talking about, but don't see themselves in it, you're never going to get change. If you see anxiety, people are like, oh, well, I don't know how to do that. Well, great. Now I'm going to lose my job and everything's going to happen. And they close in on themselves and become anxious. If there's no incentive, then there's resistance. Well, there's nothing in it for me. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm making my money.
Yeah.
If there's no resources, people are frustrated. You're telling me to do this, but you're not giving me anything to do it.
Yeah.
And then lastly, if there's no action plan, then there's false starts. We get started, then it falls off. And so, and a lot of people get lost between the vision and the action plan. Well, mm-hmm. I gave them a vision. Yes. But did you break it down into, we're going to take this step and then this step, and that step has this contingency, and we have to communicate because these things touch each other. That's how I have looked at everything that my team does. And do we do it right every time?
No. No, and that's okay.
Exactly. But we learn. And that's the beauty of this, is that you can fail. And failure, if we could do one thing and we could change failure from being a negative to being the positive that it is, yes. All of this would go away.
I couldn't agree more. It is okay to fail, because you're learning. And that Yes. Maybe sounds corny. There's a book called Make It Stick that I love about like best practices for learning, driving sustained change. And it's all about like, let people fail in a safe environment and say, that's okay. Because you got that question on the quiz wrong. You're going to remember that next time, right? Exactly. It's really important. And when you operate in a state of perfection, you're only going to fail. So you just made change management feel really, really easy because part of which I love, because it should be if it's just part of the plan. And I think what so many young enablers or enablers that are into the space are struggling with is like, oh my God, do I need a change management certification to do this? And I think like, ideally, let's do it. Let's read the books. You know, Leading Change is one of my favorites, but finding simple ways to make it relatable and approachable and just build it into your program, right? You maybe not even saying the word change management and just saying, here's our action plan. And you said something that also creates a lot of psychological safety for folks, which is if we tell our reps, here's the plan. This is all the stuff that's about to happen over the next 6, 8, 12 weeks. We have you covered. Your managers are on board, ready to support you. There's no mystery. There's no fear. There's no, I can't believe they're doing this to me. It's like, oh, I'm along for the journey here. And you're giving them multiple opportunities to get on board, which is so powerful. I want to go back to something kind of tangentially related here. So you said something really interesting when we were having our prep conversation for today, which was when you do something really well, it looks easy and everyone thinks they can do it. And I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been in scenarios, I know we've all been in scenarios where we've had stakeholders who aren't experts, but know enough to be dangerous. And that can take many different shapes and forms. So I would love to hear from you if you've had an experience or someone you know has had an experience where stakeholders kind of thought, oh, enablement is so easy. I'm just going to go do that training or build that job aid. I'd love to know what steps you took in that situation, or again, if it's somebody that you've worked with, to kind of reclaim your power in enablement.
Well, I'm still working on the reclaiming.
Listen. Always growing. It's fine.
Always. Always. When you make something look easy, everyone thinks they can do it. It is in every aspect of your life. Think about like the first time you tried to ride a bike, or anytime you watch a video or remember when you learned how to ride a bike. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But then you see people who just jump on the bike and pedal up mountains and do all kinds of things. You're like, oh, it's so easy, but it's not. And so the beauty of being good at something is that you do make it look easy because you have so much passion for it that you want people to come along on a journey with you. What it really comes down to is people don't know what enablement is. And enablement seems to be one of those words that everyone throws around now. Yesterday, I started to tick and I heard the word enablement from people outside of enablement not asking me to do something 26 times. 26.
I am going to start doing that. Like, how did your blood pressure not just,
I'm working on my poker face. That's my goal for 2024.
I will take any advice you have. Yes.
I have none, because I have no poker face at all. But it really comes back to their problem is we need to do it faster. Mm-hmm. We know how people learn. So we've got to compromise. We've got to find something in the middle so that we get all of these things met, but still manage that time and learning. And so what we've done is gone into, which many people have, a multi-phased approach and reinforcement where those who want it can have it. Those who don't want it don't have to, but there's evaluations by their leaders that say, I know you didn't want that, but now you need it. Mm-hmm. We're still working on it. Our next step in that is what I just call it traffic management. But what I did was I got buy-in from my leaders to say the only way we can truly combat RVPs going to people and saying, hey, I need you to come train my team, mm-hmm. times that by 20 teams around the world. Now the people who are SMEs can't get any of their work done. Mm-hmm. From that to ruthless prioritization of what's mm-hmm. needed, that everything must now come through my team. We have an intake form. Nothing goes to sales. If any of the SMEs are contacted by RVPs, they are to send them back to us. But this is new for us and really putting things in one bucket. And the understanding that just because it comes through my bucket doesn't mean I own it. Right. I just prioritize it and I work with the right people on a scalable programmatic level.
Exactly. I want to hear how this goes because I love this approach. And when you have that conversation with leaders around like the team can't possibly consume, absorb, and enact all of this change, they don't really get it until they see it. And I think using that data, because I've experienced this myself where one of my partners and stakeholders started just assigning enablement initiatives to their team because it was so easy. And then what we did, I said, great, let's build them a little process to do that so they can follow some best practices. Here's your job aid template, all that good stuff. We're just going to ride along with that. We're going to watch the impact, the adoption. And then we came back with a report and said, oh, no one is adopting this new process. And then we had to come back in and do some reinforcement. So I said, the time we lost, because every organization, it's like fast, fast change from a million places. And they think like the faster you throw the training at your teams or throw them the job aids, they're going to go do it. They're not. And nope. So we just kind of go into stealth mode of like, sure, go ahead, do your thing. I'm not going to fight it. We have other teams to worry about. And let's just show you the data. And now we're back and kind of back in the game, let's say. But So I love your perspective there and finding a way to get your stakeholders and SMEs on board, whether it's through data or through, hey, let's try it. Let's provide multiple paths. And then we're going to show you what folks really need. One other thing that you mentioned, and we actually talked about this a little bit, is that there is no universal understanding of the role. Even amongst enablers, we get relegated to whatever roles and responsibilities the leader of our organization thinks we should be doing. And so in your opinion, based on what you've seen and you know, folks that you've talked to, how do you think members of this community that we can be a forcing function to standardize or solidify our function?
On my team, because I am not your typical enablement person, let alone leader. I'm one of the small 10% of enablement people that has never been in sales. I've done everything. See,
you're same in the same here. Book. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been an SC. I've been a CSM. I've been a product trainer. I've everything same. Around it, but fell into sales because it wasn't that I didn't want a carry bag. It was that I couldn't ask for money. And if you can't ask somebody for money, you can't be in sales.
Jen, we are like, oh my gosh. So yes.
So I, in my team, how I approach helping the business understand what I do and helping my team understand where they fit is that I ask each member of my team, and I actually ask everyone in an interview, that everyone will tell you when you interview, someone will ask you, what are your weaknesses? And the goal is to find a way to talk through it so it sounds like a new strength. Mm-hmm. I say, I'm not going to ask you to do that. I want you to actually be vulnerable with me and tell me what your weaknesses are. And to start that, I'm going to tell you what mine are. I am not organized and I am not a planner. I have more ideas than are humanly possible. I can talk through anything. I have a background in IT, so I can understand technology. I have a lot of things to come to the table, but I don't have these things. So I hire people to augment my strengths. And so in the world of enablement, as a team, what I try to portray to the company is not, this is what enablement is, but this is what my team can do for you. It takes it away from the title and is more about, here's what we will solution. And it focuses on that solution. When I hire, I look for gaps in my team and I hire for strengths. And I wish that more people, when they were doing their resumes or their LinkedIn or something like that, would focus in on, this is what makes me unique.
Yes.
It's not going to make you the one and only, but it will make it easier for people to find the right place to help you thrive. And it also, if people hire for strengths that you have that are weaknesses of our own, that means that you get to learn how to augment your weaknesses and I get to learn from you.
That is so beautifully said. I hire in a very similar way because there's things that I want to do that I can't do. And I'm like, I just hire people that are way smarter than me because I get smarter. They get to get smarter in other areas. And I love the way that you said that. And it's so true. And I read a lot about the future of enablement, the future of L&D. And there's so many organizations that are moving towards a skills-based approach to hiring and execution. And that's how I kind of think about my team as well, of like, what are the skills we need to get these jobs done? And do we have the right people in seat to do so? Right. It's incredibly powerful. It can be really challenging, but love your take there. What I'd love to see selfishly is more vulnerability around how some enablement leaders are building their teams, challenges that they're having. That's part of why we're here today. So really appreciate your sharing some of those experiences, because I think there's amazing work happening, but none of us have it figured out. So I've one more question for you. Actually, two more questions. I lied, because we had a chat about the power of saying yes, or finding your yes. I'm a big fan of the book / movie Yes Man, in which that approach to saying yes to every single thing kind of went horribly wrong and then went really, really well. So in your opinion, how do you take that approach in your own life, and how would you encourage other folks to find their yes?
It's funny, because you and I did talk about this, and I actually went back and watched the movie again. And yes feels like a one-dimensional answer. It feels very binary. You either say yes or you say no. And I like to challenge that idea that yes is not one-dimensional.
Huh.
That it's not about saying yes. It's about finding the right yes. It's about establishing, and where people really get upset about no is because they want. Huh. And no takes away their want. But finding the right yes finds your needs and my needs and finds where they intersect. That's the right yes. We might get some of our wants in that journey, but our needs are met. And that's the key to finding that right yes. And it's a journey, and it requires communication. It requires vulnerability. It requires honesty. And it requires putting ego aside. Mm-hmm. Because when people are, nope, it will be my way, my yes, and only my yes, mm-hmm. their agenda is something else other than what they're talking about. If I were to just like say everything that comes to mind, it's like, you know what, your yes, that doesn't matter to me. So now you're not going to get anything from me. Now, mm-hmm. we can't do that. And we've already established that we as enablers don't have a lot of authority. But when we find the right yes, we as people without authority feel like we've had a little bit of authority, and it boosts our confidence. Mm-hmm. It lets us find a place where we're like, wow, we really know what we're doing. So there's an affirmation for us in it. There's a confidence building in it. There's a finding that connection with the person that's asking something of us. So we're accommodating, but we're meeting their needs without giving up our own. That's the key to the right yes.
That's incredible. And I think applying that in the context of our question to bring it all back together is really important. It's the WIFM. It's the how do we find that path to alignment? What's going to make you feel good? What's going to allow all of us to achieve our goals? So we're compromising, but we're not giving anything too profound up in the process.
Exactly.
That's incredible.
And how many people have you talked to? Because I'm actually have a rec open right now. So I'm interviewing, and I will ask people, what's your weakness? And they will say, I have a hard time saying no. So I say yes to everything. And that's the trap.
Yeah.
The doormat gives you nothing but a feeling of emptiness after you've given them everything they want. That if we don't fulfill our own, build up our own tanks, we have nothing for the next one. So don't say yes to everything. Find the right yes, where there's something in it for you too.
Exactly.
And there's got to be something in it for everybody.
That's incredible. And really saying yes to everything takes away your power, authority, your ability to show up as a strategic partner, because you're not questioning or asking, like, do your discovery and then find your yes. Like, that's the thing. Like, we are enabling sales folks. Let's follow the sales process. It works. Conduct discovery, learn about your customer, all of those things, build your mutual action plan. It's enablement. It's life. It's amazing. Okay. So final question we ask all of our guests. Jennifer, what is the best enablement advice you've ever received?
So one of them is from an individual, my individual contributor perspective, and one is from a leader perspective. So from a individual contributor perspective, it's keep the goal and action in front. Because I don't think that a cookie cutter approach to learning helps anyone. And part of that is because I have the attention span of a gnat. So I get bored pretty quickly. So I'm creative mostly to entertain myself. But sometimes I get so caught up in the creativity, I forget that someone's actually supposed to do something with this. So if I keep the goal and the action in front, then it keeps their needs along with my needs. So that's how I manage that. Yes.
Terrific.
From a management perspective, the best advice I ever got was don't take the bait.
Ooh.
Right? Because what's behind the bait? The hook. And when they hook you, they've got you. You give up all control when you take the bait from someone. You know what? We don't need your help. We can do our own enablement. Enablement's easy. I don't even know why you're here.
Yeah.
My first reaction is, what? I could do it. I could do that in 30 minutes. I could do it. And I've given away everything.
Yes. Like, damn
if
it.
I step back and say, okay, help me understand, what is the goal you're trying to achieve? And if you were to create that PowerPoint, what action do you think would come out of that? Do you know that you're going to cover what you expect them to do? How are you going to measure that? How are you going to know if it's effective? Do you think you can do that with one PowerPoint in 30 minutes? Will you let me help you? But I'm calm, I'm collected, I'm logical, and I'm not emotionally reacting to, you just called me stupid.
Yeah.
Because that's what I hear when someone says that. So don't take the bait.
I love this. And it's like de-escalating because you have the power in that position. And sometimes it feels like you don't. That's awesome. I just want to hear all of your advice, Jennifer. But unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for an incredible conversation. So what is your next stop on the conference circuit? I need to know. And then after that, where can people find you to continue learning from you?
I am speaking at the Go-to-Market Conference in Los Angeles, April 22nd and 23rd. And then I am in Las Vegas again for the Sales Enablement Summit, May 22nd. Wait, maybe it's April 24th and 25th. Yeah, I probably should have gotten those dates right, but it is on my LinkedIn.
Amazing. We'll find you on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for coming to the show, Jennifer. You are incredible.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.